Hey, hey.
Got now, I don't chill, got next. Got now, I don't chill, got next. Got now, I don't chill, got next. Got next. Got next. Got now, I don't chill, got next.
What's up, peoples? What is going on? This is E-Dub. We are back with the Who Got Next podcast, back with another episode. This week, I got my man in here, man. We've been talking for a while. Hey, man, when you going to bring me on? I said, man, I got you. MP, Marvin Price, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, man. I'm just happy to be in the room, good brother. Just happy to be in the room. I appreciate everything that you've been doing for the culture, for the city, and also I just want to say I'm happy to be on the podcast, seeing some of the people that you've already interviewed. Literally, I'm truly honored.
Hey, man, I appreciate that, and you are doing a lot as well. So I guess let's start from the beginning. You are a native of, you're not originally from Charlotte, you are a native of Birmingham, Alabama.
Yes, sir. Yes,
a member of the biggest, the baddest, the oldest, the coldest, the boldest fraternity in all the land.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
My frat brother, A5A.
Yes, guaranteed.
But, all right, so you've been in Charlotte for a few years, right?
Yeah, January 16th would make 4 years.
4 years. And you are an Auburn University graduate.
Yeah, so people kind of have that misconstrued, but I graduated from the University of Montevallo, 35 minutes south of Birmingham, and then I graduated from Auburn University with my master's in economic development.
Okay. All right. So economic development is what led you to Charlotte.
Yes.
All right. And you are a vice president of economic growth of the Charlotte Regional Business Alliance, correct?
I am.
Explain that.
So I look at, or the easiest way to explain economic development is to explain it in the form of gravity. Economic development or economic empowerment, all of that is taking place with no one ever paying attention to it. It's like gravity. Mm-hmm. No one pays attention when you jump, you come down. No one pays attention to that, right?
Correct.
I guarantee you, if you didn't, when you jump, if you didn't come down, you'll pay that some attention, right? You only pay it attention when it's malfunctioning. So think about during the recession when everyone was being laid off. Mm-hmm. Think about a Midwestern town where the city center is dying. It's because no economic recruitment. There's no economic growth. Mm-hmm. My job is to recruit recruit domestic and international companies looking to grow and expand in the Charlotte market. So it doesn't matter if it's a manufacturer, it can be an IT company, financial services, I'm going after it. If it flies, mm-hmm. I'm shooting at it.
And I think that's when I first started realizing exactly what you did. I think we had a conversation, it was about Amazon.
Yeah.
At that time, and Amazon was in a market of possibly coming to Charlotte at that time. And I think when you and I was talking about it, it was interesting how you brought it up, because it made me kind of think from Greek life, for example. When you're trying, you know, when you're actually thinking about doing it, you're not supposed to tell anybody what's going on, only certain people. So I think when you had said something about it, it was already in the works for a while, but at that time, that was when you could say something about it.
Yeah, so Amazon did something very different than most companies. They publicized that they're looking. Most companies, well, and number one, I think that is a testament to Amazon. Amazon told the entire world what they're doing because they were big and bad enough to know that no one could have impact that decision but them.
Correct.
Most companies don't say anything out of the sheer fact that they're afraid that their competitor, their employees that they currently have, the real estate cost. Because if I know you have to come to my city and I control some of the most highly desirable real estate options, mm-hmm. now I can charge you a pretty penny because I know you have to be here, kind of thing. So that's one of the reasons why it's all done in secrecy. I tell people that I belong to a mob, essentially.
That's what it sounds like.
Because it's like we have to give things code names. No one can ever know what I'm doing. It's kind of interesting because when I have a meeting or when I'm talking to some of my friends, they were like, how's your day? And I was like, man, I gave this real dope presentation. It was like, about what? Or hey, I gave this real dope presentation to this company. It was like, what does the company do? Well, I can't tell you. Because No, seriously. I sign non-disclosure agreements every single day. It's very interesting. But I'm really just happy, though. And let me make sure I say this. My views are my views and not of the Charlotte Regional Business Alliance. I want to make sure that's understood.
Yeah.
When we talked about Amazon, we talked about it from a standpoint of, man, that's wild how this company is doing this.
Correct.
But I also want people to look at it from different perspectives. You have the side that said, man, I really want Amazon to locate here. Then you have the other side that said, man, thank God we didn't get chosen.
Mm-hmm.
If you think traffic is bad now, if you think livability is an issue or affordable housing is an issue now, think about it. One of the largest demographics that we have coming down into the Charlotte metro are people from the Northeast. People from the Northeast, their average home prices are almost in the $600,000 to $700,000 range. So when Correct. They sell their house down there, you wonder why we don't have $100,000 priced homes on the market. People can come in and buy up Cherry, buy up off of West Boulevard, knock down that old house mm-hmm. and build a mini McMansion. And now you're wondering why all the price points are going up.
Mm-hmm.
So literally, if you would all of a sudden introduce 2,000, 5,000, 10,000 new individuals making over $100,000, that buying power, the average day American, the average Charlottean wouldn't have had an opportunity. And that's one of the cool things about my job and some of the things that I do on my personal side with volunteering is that I genuinely get to change a community to shape it to what I genuinely believe it could be.
And speaking of that with your volunteering, so you are are you the president now of the Urban League of Central Carolina?
Well, I want to make sure I say it the right way because we are an auxiliary group. Okay. We have the Urban League of Central Carolinas. That is an affiliate group of the National Urban League, the oldest civil rights organization in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Been fighting for people of color and just downtrodden people in general. So you have the Urban League of Central Carolinas. We are the Young Professionals. So the Young Professionals is an auxiliary group that helps and support. We're the foot soldiers, if you will, mm-hmm. for the Urban League. And I am the president currently. Thank you to all of my members for voting for me in that regard. But we are the foot soldiers for the Urban League, pushing the narrative, the movement, essentially trying to build this community, to empower people, and to end this whole situation with upward mobility. The Urban League, honestly, to sum it all up, we're about economic empowerment, man.
Right.
In every shape, form, or fashion.
And I think with us and Charlotte, which is kind of what got me started with this version of the podcast, because when I'm looking at Charlotte, I'm looking at the possibility of the upward mobility. I'm looking at the possibility of ownership, small businesses, everything from that standpoint when it comes to African Americans in particular. And right now, I think Charlotte is in this influx of what happens next with us, because we're seeing a lot of businesses, Black businesses, suffering. You have a couple that are doing great, but from a whole, you don't really see that much. You see businesses get started, but then all of a sudden they flop.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm not afraid of saying that I wake up every single day as an African American male,
mm-hmm.
and the profession that I work in and is dominated by white Caucasian males mm-hmm. over the age of 40. That is not a strange situation for me. And you may be wondering, like, man, Marvin, what the hell does that have to do with Black businesses opening or closing? I wanted to make sure people understood what I'm about to say is from that perspective. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But also we got to recognize that if it's for us, by us, then why won't we support it? It kind of seems as though us as a culture, we don't support people. And it's like we complain about it. We complain that there's no Black-owned grocery stores. But when they are open, we are not willing to pay an extra dollar for a box of cereal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had to buy it. they couldn't buy it in bulk at the same prices that Walmart or Target or Harris Teeter could buy it. So they had to pay a little bit extra, and they had to pass that cost off to the customer. Correct. But you want to be able to support that individual. So we don't do that. We don't do that at the restaurants and a lot of other things, right? Mm-mm. So when you talk about what's happening to us, we're not supporting each other, but also some of the times, let's call a spade, man. Sometimes these business plans are not great business plans.
Lack of education. So that's where I was going with. I do think a lot of times it's a lack of education. I've had the privilege of talking to a few people that actually owns a legit business. And when I mean, and I want to be careful when I say legit business. When I'm saying legit business, I'm talking about an actual storefront. I'm talking about they're actually going in there, paying some type of rent.
Yeah.
And producing some type of good. I'm not talking about, okay, I have a business that I'm starting that's kind of, you know, like self-service, if that's...
No, I get exactly what you're coming from.
If that's the best what I'm saying. So when you're having these conversations with them, they brought up three good main points.
Okay.
They talk about the business plan, as you talked about. Yeah. Working capital was a real big thing.
Yeah.
Working capital, and then just the lack of knowledge of not knowing what you're getting into.
Yeah, so, I mean, but that goes down to, like, lack of education.
Correct.
But I give a great example. Talking to my mother, I remember when the BP oil spill hit, right?
In the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, like seriously. I used to be a real heavy like stock guy, like wanting, I wanted to be a day trader. I wanted to be an investment banker.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, not that guy, but I wanted to make some money. And what was crazy about it is that I was trying to explain to my mother, I was like, hey, when you look up the major shareholders of BP, British Petroleum, it's the British government. They cannot let this company fail. It will not go out of business. Their pensions for the federal government is tied to this company. Mm-hmm. The same way we supported General Motors or AIG, I'm telling you, mama, buy some stock in this. It's only going for $19. Mm-hmm.
That was at that time.
Yeah. So think about in the height of the oil prices in 2013, 2014, when they were trading. Yeah. So if she would have bought it for that 19 and when it was trading for darn near $100, you get where I'm coming from. But it's an educational mindset. So mm-hmm. that's what I wanted to talk to you about in regards to these businesses that a lot of people have never had to think this way. And it's your first time thinking like, man, I want to do something. They may not have the real mindset or the structure of how it can really be formed, but they just know I need to do something. And I commend people that are willing to step out there and open their business. But there are so many different governmental programs, there are so many nonprofits that will cultivate your business plan. Because if you don't have, I hear a lot of these Instagram people saying, if you got a plan B, then you planning to fail. Well, nah. Where I'm from, I like to mitigate all risk. I want to see how many different ways I can fail. And then I want to make sure that I eliminate those ways that I can fail.
And I also think that is a little bit of a, it is misconstrued a little bit, and a little bit skewed at the same time. Because when you are going into certain situations of trying to make a business happen, the failures are the learning lessons. So yeah. It's not really you failing. It's you saying, okay, that part didn't work. So let me take a step back. Let me survey the land again, and let me find another way to make that happen. There's nothing wrong with the aim. Sometimes you just have to change the target.
Yeah, I mean, so with those storefronts, and I mean, honestly, in this day and age, I personally probably, depending on what product or service I'm trying to provide, I wouldn't have a storefront just because of the sheer fact that brick and mortar is not always the best thing. Mm-hmm. Look at the whole idea of having a food truck. Like, that's eliminating the idea of having, like, a actual brick-and-mortar restaurant at times. But it's all about what demographic you're trying to appeal to and how you're trying to make certain things work. But I truly believe the only way that people of color are going to thrive and continue to flourish in this city is that people of color support these individuals.
I agree. So let's take it from a different angle. I agree with the support of we need to support each other.
Yeah.
But your business also has to be good.
Yeah, man. there should never be a situation where I do believe in the mantra that the customer is always right. There should never be a time. Man, I have, as a worker, My product is the city of Charlotte. My product is this region. I sell this region. I sell you as a commodity that if a company comes here, that they can actually have access to the people that work here. You can have access to the infrastructure. I sell this community, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I'm dealing with a client and he says, hey, man, I heard about CMS schools are not great. I can't say, what you mean the school system is not awesome and great? I'm exaggerating right now, and I know I kind of got loud, but think about some of the times that you've had some bad customer service when someone got an attitude with you because you had a complaint.
Right.
Like, no, I am the customer. I'm trying to spend my money with you. Out of all the places I could have went, no, you need to address this. So in my world, Nah, you can never get attitude. It's always a, how can I solve that problem? What does a solution look like to you? And I think sometimes people try to scale too big and try to go too far. I'd rather be small and nimble and have my finances solid that I know I can produce and meet the expectations of the said output that I said I was going to do, than trying to go too big and not knowing whether or not I'm going to be able to meet those expectations, because you only have one time to make a good impression. But at the same time, I want us as a people to know, man, hold these people accountable. But also, is nothing wrong with, after you did your service, going to them saying, hey, you know, I feel like you could have did this differently.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I know when it comes to people, but it's also where you present that information.
Yeah.
You kind of talked about that, because when I am talking to somebody, let's just say I am dissatisfied.
Okay.
I'm not blasting them on social media.
Nah.
I'm not blasting them on social media. I'm not trying to get into the peanut gallery with other people, because a lot of times, and I've had this experience, not with myself, but indirectly was with me a while back with somebody else that I knew, that it was just a miscommunication that the other person just was totally unaware had happened. He had got hacked when he was doing business.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that he was doing business with, you know, blasted it. And he blasted it from a standpoint of thinking that this dude was trying to shit on him. He didn't have no idea what was going on. I just happened to see it. But he just went through this whole thing. And just me knowing the whole situation, here come other people. Like, oh man, I know how they do, man. They don't do good business. Who are you? This was an isolated incident where a guy got hacked, had no idea he got hacked, because I had got hacked at the same time. So I think it was just kind of going around, and it just. But then he went back later on, and was like, look, after a week, because when he made all these comments, you know, he made sure to block the person. And I'm like, bro, that's not how you handle things. But then come a week or two later, now you want to apologize and say, well, you know, I was wrong. It was a miscommunication or just a misunderstanding of something that happened, and we fixed it. But look what you just did. You ruined it. You ruined it for everybody else that make that assumption about people. So,
no, I understand. And it's just word to the wise of anyone that is looking to build a business. Your name is all that you have in this world. So I give you a personal thing about myself. It bothers me to my core when somebody speaks negatively of me when I know I haven't done something.
Facts.
Because at that moment, they're trying to attack my brand. So if someone said, man, you know, Marvin, that dude's super shady. And it's like, well, hold on. If my character and my name does not identify with that, someone saying that, you're attacking my brand. And you know what McDonald's does, or Burger King, or Walmart, or Google, when someone tries to attack their brand?
They're suing you for defamation.
Yeah, because it's their name.
Right.
Your name is your name. Shout out to The Wire.
Pusha T.
Yeah. Yeah.
My name is my name.
But your name is your name, but your brand. So I would recommend, if anyone out there is really trying to start a business, make sure that you do look into trying to get a publicist, because truly that narrative that you just talked about could literally be mitigated if they had a publicist. And honestly, I've been thinking about getting one myself. So if there are any publicists out there, please email me at marvinjprice86@gmail.com.
And shout out to the Who Got Next podcast. I actually got a couple that I think.
Hey, okay.
that might be of service to you that I think are pretty good people. So we'll talk offline about.
Yeah.
I'll talk offline about that. But I do agree. And I think that's where we get caught up. We get caught up a lot of times because social media plays a big part in our demographic and promoting the business. But again, when something goes wrong,
yeah,
they trash you. Now, there's two sides to that. There's a legit reason why it went wrong, or it could be just hearsay, and it was never the issue. Unfortunately, some people, I don't want to insult the consumer's intelligence, but with social media, sometimes that lack of that I have this mantra that I always say, think first, react second. Make sure what you're doing and what you're hearing is correct. Don't just jump the gun because somebody else says something. Do your own due diligence to figure out what's going on. And I don't think a lot of us do that. And when I say a lot of us, I'm speaking from a general standpoint.
No, absolutely. I do believe, I mean, and this is for all walks of life. I mean, you have a mob mentality. Have you ever noticed when people start clapping in a room when somebody's getting an award? And then slowly everybody starts standing up. It's a mob mentality. That's exactly what it is.
Right.
You didn't want to clap, but now I don't want to be the one that's not clapping that everyone's going to look at.
It's like a church.
Yeah, so everyone starts getting up to clap. And I've always noticed that, or like when someone offers gum, and I've seen it so many times. I watched this guy in my office here offer someone like a piece of gum, and they was like, nah. He's like, you sure? And it's like that second push is like, hey, man, you better take this gum. And it's like they take it or whatever. Right, and it's like a mob mentality. It's interesting, man.
Well, let's talk about your job. How big is it on diversity?
I would say, honestly, my team that I'm on is the most diverse in the organization. You have an African-American male. You have an Asian woman. You have a European male. You have a middle-aged white woman, and then you have a white male. So it's like literally we have the whole spectrum. Oh, and we have a Japanese woman as well. Like, I mean, so we have Japan and China both being represented from Asia. So it's like it's very diverse. But our organization is diverse as well. And I truly believe one of the things that makes our community and our region so unique is that diversity. And we do, I personally play that up big time. But I want people to understand that diversity is not a big thing for some companies that are looking to relocate in this region. Let's call a spade a spade. A manufacturer doesn't care, especially just a middle of the road assembly manufacturer does not care if you white, black, Asian, like they don't care. They just want somebody to be able to do the job. Literally,
their bottom line.
Hey, are you going to come in on time? Are you going to pass this drug test? Is the quality standards going to be good from this particular employee? Do it, right? However, we do have some companies. I remember one particular company came in. The company culture was so unique, and they were so sensitive to it. For 2 days, they went to go speak to members of the Charlotte Black Chamber, the Hispanic Chamber, the LGBTQ Chamber. They went to speak to churches. They went to the mosque. I'm talking about from the Jewish Federation. Like, literally, it was all about those conversations because they were so big on different walks of life and wanting to know that this community is open and welcoming to everyone. I was fortunate enough to go give a presentation to Honeywell before they, made the relocation and everything. And that was one thing that was really big to them, diversity. Being in a room, talking to hundreds of people and telling them how great it's going to be in this community. And I remember one guy like standing up and asking a question. He was like, but it's the South. Is it really like the South? And I was like, well, I want you to really like think about this for a second. If I didn't feel that the city of Charlotte was a welcoming community, you really think as a black man I'll be up here right now trying to sing his praises? Honeywell isn't paying me to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm here because I genuinely believe in this community, because it's been nothing but greatness since I've been here.
Mm-hmm. And with the community itself, so how do you've seen it. You've been here for the past 4 or 5 years, so you actually came right at the turn of things starting to really just.
Well, actually, I kick in a little bit. I don't think I did. I just think I came here when people actually became cognizant of the buzz that we've had. Charlotte has been buzzing and booming since the 90s, right?
Correct.
So it's kind of like that analogy with the frog. If you put a frog in lukewarm water and you start heating it up, it's not going to jump out because it's just stagnant.
Right.
Nobody pays attention to how fast the city's moving. It's moving at light speed, but it just doesn't feel like it because no one's paying attention to the signs.
Right.
No one paid attention to what was happening to Cherry. People just thought houses was getting bought up, right? No one paid attention to the light rail getting built. They just only paid attention to the traffic. No one's paying attention to the west side right now because they're just thinking, okay, that's another trolley going that way. I'm telling you, these are things that are happening that is going to change the infrastructure of the city. Everyone's like, oh, well, they just approve. They just going to do a light rail out there to Belmont out there in Gadsden County.
Nah, there's a reason for it.
And it's like, are you guys not seeing the triggers?
And most don't. And
that's what I'm saying, though. But it's like, those are the things that frustrate me. Like, genuinely, I want to say this. I believe in duality.
Mm-hmm.
I want someone to be able to talk to me about Project Pat, 2 Chainz. I want them to be able to talk to me about real estate. I want you to be able to talk to me about religion. But I also want you to be able to talk to me about business. But I also want to know what Cardi B and Offset arguing about. I want to know all of everything. But it bothers me when I feel as though it's skewed one way. I don't want to always talk about the plight of the black man and the black woman, but I also don't want to only talk about what's going on World Star or on the Correct. Breakfast Club. Because, again, that's the reason why some of this stuff is happening and people aren't paying attention to it.
Because there are distractions out there.
I mean, there are distractions.
And there's people just not really paying attention. Like, they don't care.
I feel like sometimes people genuinely don't care. But look at Hidden Valley right now.
Mm.
If you want a word of advice, think about this. Like, let me give you free game. And this is, it's certain stuff that I've tried to put my friends on. Or, like, I can't tell some information because it's, I mean, again, I signed non-disclosure agreements.
Sensitive information.
Yeah, so, I mean, think about it for a second. Right?
Whatever you can give us, please.
No,
I give
great game real quick. So right now, you know for a fact that the light rail has been pre-approved to be able to do the study.
Which was a couple weeks ago they approved it.
Yeah, so if you know for a fact, well, let's take it a step further.
And this is the one going towards the Wilkinson down.
Yeah, yeah, airport. So right, peep game on this. The referendum for the increase in the sales tax for the arts and science council and all that kind of stuff that did not go through.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately after that, it was approved to be able to get the study done for the feasibility of the Silver Line. But now people are like, well, who gonna pay for it? Well, that sales tax referendum just didn't get passed. So where you think
the money coming from?
Yeah, you think you don't think the city and the county ain't gonna get together and try to get this referendum passed to be able to fund that light rail? But here's the thing. If I now all of a sudden have access to the city center, into the airport, and all of this cheap land, what you think gonna happen? Because an acre of land directly in the city center is more expensive than out on the west side or on the east side of town. Ooh. So if I know for a fact that this land is not as high, but I'm finna have access to the city center soon, why would I not want to buy that land? You get where I'm coming from?
I get exactly where you're coming from.
So, I mean, we talk about the housing. We talk about affordability and things of that nature. But when I want to challenge us as a people. I don't know who your demographic really are that listens to the podcast. Maybe it is people of color. Maybe it's not. But I want to speak to my people of color for just a moment, right? We talk about, man, is affordability and this, that, and other. But we went buying these homes in these neighborhoods that were falling down.
Right.
that's run down. We weren't buying these homes for $70,000 when they were going for $70,000. We weren't. Now, we do have some situations where some people have been bamboozled out of their homes and the back property taxes and all of that stuff because of educational situations and not knowing and getting scammed. However, how can we get mad when somebody else come in the hood and buy the hood when we've been living in the hood and we said we weren't going to buy that house?
And that and right there is where I kind of get into debates a lot of times when it comes to the word gentrification. Because sometimes people look at the word gentrification and they automatically assume bad. And depending on the kind of what you just said, and I want to be sure I'm making it clear when I'm saying it, because based off what you just said, kind of falls into that line, because I'm thinking to myself, okay, why didn't we as a community make sure that this stuff was in place? Shout out to Wilmo. He had an event called A Vibe Called Fresh. What he does at his events is he's been very keen on making sure that African Americans in Charlotte are aware of the resources and education to get into home ownership. That's one of his big things. I know he has different things that he wants to get into, but I know that's one of them. So shout out to Wilma, because I know he's probably listening right here. And I want to give him a shout out there, because I think I like how he goes about it, because he's always making sure that that information is readily available. So at this event, he had former Councilor LaWanna Mayfield on the panel, and she made this comment, and this comment has stuck out to me ever since this event happened back in September. She was talking about an individual that owned property around, I want to say, East Boulevard or West, that going towards Uptown like Tryon. I apologize if I'm getting the area wrong, but I think it's in that area. Where this woman had paid $40,000 for her home at that time. House been bought, paid for everything. Somebody came in asking about her home, and all she had to do was probably make one phone call to figure out, okay, why is this person calling me about this? Go back to what you said before, lack of education. Long story short, she sold it. She sold it for what she paid for, $40,000. Ask me how much that property was worth before she signed her name on that dotted line.
How much was it worth?
$800,000.
Okay, so...
Now she's staying with relatives.
Yeah, so there's a lot of nuances in regards to that. But I do want to make sure people understand there's a difference between gentrification and revitalization.
Thanks. And I wanted you to go to that. So
gentrification is when you live in a neighborhood and you can no longer afford to live in your neighborhood because of the redevelopment that has taken place. So, example, if you bought a house in 1950 and all of a sudden in 2020, which is in a few months, the homes have been redeveloped and made into this great thing. And now you bought your house for maybe, say, $50,000. But now the county and the city is assessing your property that is worth $1 million. So now you got to pay the property taxes on a home that the city and the county values as $1 million. You get where I'm coming from?
I get exactly.
Because all of the homes in your neighborhood have been built up, and now it's been those homes are valued at $1 million. Mm-hmm. So the city and the county is saying, well, just because you didn't do anything to yours, everyone else has, and it's been reassessed that the land is worth more than when you bought it. Now you can't afford it. What if you still working a little job? So now you're not disabled. You're not at that age where someone could say, well, you qualify to have your property taxes abated, because you can do that. Again, it's an educational thing.
Mm-hmm.
My grandma back in Birmingham, she doesn't pay property taxes. My dad doesn't pay property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, there are programs to stop these kind of things taking place, but which is why I said
she could have made a phone call and probably
just one. But that whole gentrification thing is now when that person can't afford to pay their property taxes, so they got to leave. But here's the caveat to that: that individual can still sell that property and it's valued at $1 million. You get where I'm coming from?
I get exactly where you're coming
from. But then there's a thing like revitalization where, let's call a spade a spade. When you got that that house that's dilapidated, that you got squatters living in, that some little girl can get snatched up or some little child can get snatched up in. We don't want that in our neighborhood. Mm-mm. So when someone comes in and they want to revitalize it and make it look good, you can't get mad when a person that does that is a person of not color. All I'm saying is because we let that house stay in the neighborhood, and it's our neighborhood, mm-hmm. and we could have did something about it. You know how many times I've asked my friends literally here in Charlotte? I got the game. I know where it's going to go. Hey, man, we could literally just, if everyone put in $20,000, and I understand right now on this podcast, it sounds that I'm affluent. Let's not get that misconstrued. God has blessed me, but, you know, I ain't getting it like that. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit. Not, but I ain't on that Mayweather money yet. But if everybody put in $20,000, right? You know what we could have did? We could have easily bought one of the houses off of Tryon in Tremont. Well, we would have bought one of those townhomes for $400,000, and we would have just rented it out, mm-hmm. right? And then a month later, Lowe's would have announced that their new corporate headquarters or their corporate campus, their innovation center. I'm sorry. Let me make sure I clarify that. It's not the corporate headquarters. It's an innovation center. That's going to have 2,000 software engineers making at roughly $115,000 to $150,000, less than two blocks away. What you think that property is going to be worth in the next 10 years?
Way more than what you paid.
Nah, not what I paid.
Well, I mean, man,
what my team of people would have been.
That's what I'm saying.
You get where I'm coming from?
Yeah,
so
I get
it's
where
like,
coming from.
We
the investment that you made is going to, what they're coming in for is going to be way further than the investment.
Yeah,
that
that's what
on,
I'm saying. But it's like we don't sometimes we don't want to go into business with one another. It's like this inherent distrust that we have for business. But going back to that young lady or that woman that lost her stuff, that gentrification and that revitalization, things are real. People are getting scammed. That's why I always say, like, I'm sorry, I don't have no sympathy. I have no sympathy for somebody. Like, because I think it's a difference, and we really got to make sure that it's defined. I have no sympathy when we allowed grandma to live in a house for 30 years that she did not own. And when a man says, I want to rent my home out now for the market value that it is worth, that I'm looking at, that we looking at that man like he's getting over, like he trying to scam. Why the hell did we let grandma live in a house for 30 years that's not her house? You get where I'm coming from?
We just
paid for somebody else's house. But we've been paying for grandma to live there.
Right.
What the hell is going on?
That's lack of education, man.
It's a lack of education. And then it's like, but here's the thing. It's in a book. You know how I learned how to trade stock? Really? I literally got on YouTube and I said, how to invest in stock for dummies.
it ain't funny, but I get
You know how I've learned about real estate now? Mm-hmm. I literally typed into YouTube, how to buy real estate for dummies. If it's good enough for a dummy, you get, I don't want anyone to get it misconstrued like I'm some educated genius, because I'm not.
You went searching for the information.
I wanted to know this information, but at the same time, it's the same thing that Martin Luther King been talking about, the same thing Frederick Douglass was talking about, the same thing Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey, all of these great individuals were talking about ownership, because if you own it, can't nobody take it away from you. And if you do take it away from me, you got to give me fair or equal value to what it is today. It is no way that someone can take your land from you. You get where I'm coming from?
I get exactly where you're coming from, man. And you touched on a good point, and I want to be sure to reemphasize that point, because actually me and my frat brothers from my school is actually doing this right now. We are in the process of, you know, putting together our investment group. And we've been doing that for the past 2 or 3 years, working on building up the money up from it and everything like that. But it's a good idea, because I'm not going to say nobody else is doing it, because there are other people out there doing it. The problem is scared. You know, being scared, the lack of education, and, you know, just a whole bunch of other reasons. But again, I always say, sometimes two heads is better than one in some cases. And I think when it comes to trying to invest and trying to build up the community, trying to find things to put your money in to make that grow, You need a team of people. It shouldn't be just one person.
No, absolutely. Like, even the whole situation with opportunity zones, right? The whole premise of an opportunity zone is literally, like, it scares me, though. Mm-hmm. Because right now, the federal government, it's so deep, it could blow your mind. So the federal government basically said, hey, we want to give a tax credit. Basically, if you sell your stock or whatever you do, that funds the money that you have, you can invest that money into an opportunity zone. And once you invest that money into an opportunity zone, that money will basically be tax free from leaving that money in one of these opportunity zones. The opportunity zones, guess what? They in the hood. So the idea is to create revitalization into some of these downtrodden communities. What would be the unintended consequences? Because no one ever thinks about that. And we've been trying to mitigate that by educating people of color to know that it's not just a white man's game. And I'm not, no offense to white people or anything like that.
But people look to them when these things are happening.
Yeah, so it's like, all right, well, if you know for a fact now that opportunity zones exist, why won't we invest in some of the communities that are in the opportunity zones? Like, I want to be, if somebody's going to be a gentrifier of a neighborhood in the hood,
it should be you that lives in the community.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if I'm saying that this is a predominantly African American community, historically black, or this, that, and the other, why is it then no longer a historically black community? Is it because we selling our properties? Is it because we don't care?
I think it's all of the above.
I mean, but
and don't own.
Yeah, and we don't own. And don't so own. Because again, here's the funny thing: we can call a neighborhood historically black neighborhood, but is it a black neighborhood just because we were renting a house there? That's where all the black people live. Because I don't really consider that like a historically black neighborhood if we just was renting houses out there. You get where I'm coming from? They ain't no different than the projects in my mind.
Nope.
But, I mean, I'm not trying to be controversial or anything or strike a chord with anyone. But, actually,
need to strike a chord. I mean, we need to have a chord struck because we are at the age, not even at the age, we're just in that place where, look, we have to pay attention because there's so much, again, because that word is being thrown around, so, which is gentrification.
Man, again, free game. Free game. In Birmingham, Alabama, right now, from where I'm from, literally, I could buy my neighborhood. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. Literally, I'm looking at back taxes. Okay, oh, they haven't paid their taxes for the last 5 years. At bare minimum, I'm going this upcoming next May, because they only do it once a year. But you can go to every single courthouse and figure this information out. Okay, cool. They haven't paid their back taxes for the last 5 years. I'm going to go buy that. Literally, in the state of Alabama, just me paying that money. So at bare minimum, let's say it was only $5,000. I buy their property taxes for $5,000, right? For every month that they haven't paid me my money back, they got to pay me 12% interest. Or not 12%, 1% interest. At the end of the year, that's 12% interest. Where can you put your money and get 12% interest? Or if they don't do it, then you can get their house. Because you just keep paying the property taxes on it, and it just keeps building. But again, that's going to be my neighborhood then after that. It seems shady. It seems dirty. But at the same time, that's exactly how people keep losing their houses. But if it's my neighborhood, if it's going to be a community that I grew up in, it's going to be something that
You're going to have a hand in trying to figure out what happens next with
no,
that.
No. I'm saying, but that's the thing. It's like, I'm tired of the narrative being like, people don't want to do nothing for us, or it's so hard for us out here. And I'm like, I don't disagree. I do not disagree.
But there's a lack of effort.
I'm saying this world is not fair. But what I am also saying is, I'm going to get it out the mud till somebody tell me to stop. That's it. And I'm telling you, you can do this in your neck, because a lot of people in Charlotte are transplants. And if this is the city that you want to live in, why wouldn't I mitigate my risk? People say they scared or this, that, and the other. I'm saying, like, I don't think about the business going to be successful all the time. I'm trying to mitigate my risk. So right now, me losing $50,000, I ain't going to lie, that's going to hurt. Mm-hmm. But me losing $10,000, I get that back. You feel me? Right. So it's like, if I get five people and we all put in $10,000, yeah, now I got to split that profit five ways. But if I lose, I'm not devastated from it.
Right.
But we never think about that from a cultural standpoint. Everybody wants to be Nino Brown. Nobody wants to be G Money.
That's facts.
Shout out to New Jack City. It was a great movie.
It was, man. That was some good information, man. But I do appreciate, man, we could talk forever, really.
I mean, I got nothing but time, man.
I wish I did. You know, like you said, time is money. But, of course, you know, somebody else got to come in a little bit. But we will have this conversation again, man. I would love to bring you on again and just have you in here with some other, you know, some other guys that everybody could just kind of bounce off information.
Can I just make sure I say this before we go?
Hey, man, your world, man.
My challenge to everyone that is listening is to push themselves to the limit. If you have a dream, pursue it with a zeal like no other. I truly believe there is something great in each and every last one of us. It's not just about the money for me. It's about... Money is not power, in my opinion. Money is options. And I want us as a people to have options to decide what we want to do with these communities that we live in.
I would like to add to that. What I would like to add to that is step out of your comfort zone. Step out of your circle. We kind of had this conversation offline. You know, step out of your circle and step out of the, you know, not everybody's going to have the same interest as you. And sometimes the people that you've been, you know, that you've grown up with or mm-hmm. or been a part of, there's nothing against them. Everybody has their journey and where they want to go. So when you're going through your journey in life, you're going to lose some friends and you're going to pick up some friends. But, you know, you're always going to have that core group of people. But step out. You'd be surprised at what you learn from other people that you never thought you ever would. Hey, I mean, I talk to Marvin all the time, but we never went this in depth into a conversation. So I do want to thank you for sharing your insight on what your job entails and what that means for Charlotte. So I do appreciate that, sir.
Hey, anytime, man. If anyone wants to get a hold of me after this to talk business, any ways that I can help in any shape, form, or fashion, I gave my email out again in the beginning of this podcast. But Eric, if anyone needs to talk about business or ways on how to get started, please let me know.
I definitely will, man. That's the purpose and the premise of this show is to talk to like-minded people. And as soon as I hear something, I'm connecting them. You know, no free of charge. I'm not about the money. I am about the information. So appreciate it. This is E-Dub, and you are with the Who Got Next podcast. Of course, if you want to get in contact with me, you can hit me up on my Instagram. My Instagram is whogotnext_CLT. Or you can give me a comment or shoot me a topic if you want to on my email. My email is whogotnextclt@gmail.com. And like I always state, if you out there, I'm going to find you. And if I find you, we going to talk. All right? Peace.